Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. It is a Friday, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here for our first get-together in the new year.
Ready for snow?
I'm ready for snow, absolutely. You know, that's what happens in January.
It is what happens. Everybody's surprised. Actually, so far, we've been pretty lucky. We have not really had the plow, just a touch.
You've got the salt ready in the
We have about 140,000 tons. So if you multiply 140,000 times 2,000, that's something like 280 million, if I do my math easily.
A lot of salt.
A lot of zeros.
Should be exactly so.
But they're talking about snow. The good news is if it comes on Saturday and Saturday night, it will be inconvenient. It will be hard to get to church or to the movies or whatever you do Saturday night and Sunday morning. But it does let us plow without a lot of traffic on the road. So by Monday, everything should be fine. So that's the good news. The bad news is, and it really is sad, there's a funeral today. I read about a Bronx Marine. He was the first U.S. casualty in Afghanistan this year, killed by a landmine, 21 years old, Lance Corporal Alberto Francesconi. Funerals today, and this was his second deployment to the combat zone, left for Iraq in 07, came home New Year's Day last year. In the 3rd Battalion, 8th Marine Regiment, 2nd Marine Division, came out of Camp Lejeune where he got his training. It just, you know, you feel sorry.
You feel
He's
awful.
Got a wife and mother and brother who's a naval reservist.
Too many families across the country.
The good news is it's a lot lower than it was, but, you know, when it hits your community, it's somehow or other is not just something you read about. It's, I don't know why we pay more attention when it's ours, community versus, because they're all tragic, but...
It's a news story when it's a local story, and that's what it's all
about.
Well,
you know, then you look at what's going on in the Middle East. It's tragic. Civilians on both sides. I mean, we have a lot of Palestinians and Muslims who live here who have relatives over there, and they're dying. We have a lot of Israelis who live here and have family over there who are constantly under attack from Hamas. You know, you can only pray that somehow or other everybody finds a ways to start living together. In the meantime, the Israelis are going to defend themselves.
You were there. It was last weekend. Were you
there last. I had a Saturday morning, a plaque dedication for a fire lieutenant who had died on January 3rd a year ago. And in the fire department, they have this custom of they put a plaque up on the wall commemorating anybody that dies in the line of duty a year after the tragedy, and it was there with his mother, his wife, who gave a great eulogy. It was just tore your heart out. And two young kids, one of whom I don't know that he ever saw, or just a baby, because he probably never did. I'm sure, now that I think about it, I think the baby was only 6 months old or something. And a little boy who, you know, they're going to grow up without a father. And here's a guy who puts his life on the line. And, you know, from the stories I read, he got all his men out and he didn't make it. But then I flew over to Israel for 12 hours and back.
What is the sense that you have of the people that you talked with in Israel about this and the constant conflict? That's really my question. Living under the constant conflict.
Well, in the place that
for 60 years.
In the place that we went, Israel's been fighting for its existence for 60 years. So the basic problem is there are two groups of people, both of whom believe that God gave them the same piece of ground. And I don't know how you know, if you have a solution to that problem, I guarantee you a Nobel Peace Prize, and it would be well deserved. It's in this area close to the Gaza Strip. Remember, there's two areas where Palestinians live, the West Bank and Gaza. Israel pulled out of Gaza in 2005, sealed up the borders because they're afraid of
suicide bombers.
And have in fact built a fence or a barrier along the Western Bank, which does seem to have stopped a lot of the suicide bombers. Anyways, since 2005, Hamas has been lobbing rockets into these towns close by. They're starting to get bigger rockets, which will go further, putting more of Israel Israel in jeopardy. And, you know, people have been killed. And, you know, how'd you like to have rockets? And, people have said to me, well, is Israel doing the right thing? I just think, what would we do here if you had rockets lobbed across one of our borders? But it's tragic. You know, we have plenty of our, you're and my fellow citizens here in New York who are Muslim, who are losing people over there, and they obviously have a different view than the Israelis.
Is there a resignation that this is just the way it is?
I don't know. I mean, you should never throw your hands up. Listen, there is peace, for example, in Northern Ireland. Nobody would have thought that.
Yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
Catholics
I was over there. Catholics and Protestants are living together. You know, how much they like each other and socialize together, I don't know. But after a while, you start to like each other and socialize together and do business
together.
Better
than bombs and...
And it's absolutely right. And here, it's it really is tragic. But, you know, listen, the Israelis are going to defend themselves, and we would do the same thing. In the end, Hamas is a terrorist group, and they are... if they would stop lobbing rockets, I assume the Israelis would stop trying to stop them from lobbing rockets.
All right. Back to New York State, the governor this week with his State of the State. You were there. You watched.
I was there in the snow in Albany.
What a trooper.
No, the state troopers were there.
They were there. First of all, can you believe David Paterson memorized an hour's speech?
I thought about that. I have trouble. I mean, my Spanish, I can't memorize five words and remember them the next day. You know, that's the ways he has to function.
Correct.
He's all his life been functionally blind. And that's how he does it. I don't know whether you and I would be able to do it if all our lives we had the same problem. Maybe he has a particular talent, but it is impressive. Having said that, you know, listen, I've been to baseball games with David Paterson. He can't see it all out of one eye, out of the other. Distance vision, if he uses a binoculars, he can see some. He enjoys baseball games, loves it. He compensates in other ways with memorization. Quick study, good, obviously listens. Good thing he doesn't have my ears of an almost 67-year-old man. I can't. Last night we were at a dinner the night before, and I couldn't hear across the table. If people kept talking, I had no idea what they were saying.
Oh, well, we have to keep that in mind here. We'll have to speak up.
I know, I couldn't. I was at that last weekend. I went to my mother's 100th birthday, and when she doesn't turn her hearing aid on, it's, you know, one of these conversations. Mother, how are you, huh? I didn't hear what you said. Mother, how are you? Mother, I'll call you tomorrow. Oh, okay. It was selective hearing.
All right. Did you hear anything that you liked in the State of the State?
Yeah. Listen, there's always good things and there's always bad things. Some of the things that I liked is the governor is trying to do statewide what we've done in the city in terms of improving public health, focusing on obesity and smoking and calories and counts so people know what they're buying and trans fats. Some people say that's, you know, nanny state, but the bottom line is life expectancy in New York City is now higher than the country as a whole, and if protecting the health and extending the lives of our citizens isn't government's first job, I guess I don't understand what it is. It's bringing down crime. It's bringing down traffic deaths and deaths by fire. It's getting people to wear seat belts and guards in the windows with young kids. It's keeping people from having to breathe secondhand smoke. We've saved hundreds of thousands of lives there. It's giving people an incentive to eat green foods and get exercise. Obesity is the single biggest problem this country has. The only public health issue that is growing, single biggest public health problem. It's the only one that is growing. And if kids are obese, they will be obese as parents and then as adults, and then you have all sorts of things that shorten your life and make your life a lot less pleasant. Anyways, the governor, those things are good. The governor didn't really address, because he did in his budget, I guess, 5 weeks earlier, the financial implications of the economic downturn are for the state and for the cities, because the state, remember, state collects money from the same people that live in the cities and then redistributes part of it. And nobody's ever happy with how much or for what. I will say I'm sympathetic with the governor. I was reading the papers today. Everybody's dumping on Obama. They don't like his plans. It's easy to criticize.
This morning.
They're against everything. Okay,
and
now what are you in favor
too.
of? Oh, when they want. The governor, one of the things he said was, you know, we have to address the issue of the MTA not having a capital budget, or not having sufficient funds, I guess he said, to operate. And we're going to have to do this. And the applause was really worrisome, almost none in the chamber of the but in the end, fares are going to go up 23-odd%, the service is going to get cut, or they're going to find another ways to fix the problem. But you can't just sit there and be against everything, and that's why the MTA, which legally has to have a budget, I had my four members vote for it. We're not going to shut down the MTA. Now, if the state can figure out a better way, great.
All right, now, the federal government, it seems to me that every government agency or entity or leader, and I would include you in that group as well, is waiting for the federal government
we're way down the pecking order, and right. The good news is we don't really have to face our budget problems until next June. Although I do, by the end of this month, have to have a budget that says how we would balance the budget under whatever assumptions are reasonable. For example, I don't know whether at the end of this month we can assume money will go from the federal government to the state and from the state to us. I don't know that we can assume at the end of this month that the Albany legislature will change the governor's budget. What we'll probably have to do is, in our assumptions, and you footnote it and say, look, I don't know if it's right, but we got to have some assumptions, we'll assume that nothing comes from the federal government, because by then they probably wouldn't have passed anything. It's only 2 weeks away. And we'll assume that the Albany legislature adopts the governor's budget as is, which is a bad assumption. But I don't know what else you could pick. And then based on that, this is how we would, which will be revenue enhancements. You know how to read that. And service
adjustments. It's not spelled the same, by the way.
That's right. It's a much
shorter word.
And it is certainly going to mean, unless things change, would mean very large layoffs in the municipal workforce. Our tax revenues are plummeting. Now, I hope we find ways not to do that, and I'm going to work very hard. But in January, we'll have to come up with a budget. Nevertheless, I think you're right. Everybody is assuming that the federal government will bail out the states. And when I went down yesterday to listen to Obama, we were invited down, and he had a briefing for a bunch of mayors, so I sat there.
Yesterday?
Yesterday. And mayor of Philadelphia, Michael Nutter, is a really good guy. Mayor of Trenton, Doug Palmer. Mayor of Miami, Manny Diaz, who's the head this year of the Conference of Mayors. Mayors from Providence and Louisville and lots of cities. And what we heard loud and clear was a constant reference to money going to the states, and we keep pointing out that it goes to the states, never gets to the city, or at least...
Not in its entity.
That's correct, and not quickly and not in the size that it was meant to do. And if you really want to help the economy, that's what you got to do, because in the end, it's the cities where people live and where you can right. spend the money and where jobs are being lost. But everybody is sitting there saying, oh, well, you got to bail out the states. If they do, then the state won't cut us back as much, if at all. Because if, the cuts, the layoffs we're going to have are going to be because the state's cutting our budget. We've been able to handle it except for that. So we'll have to see what they do. But we'll have a preliminary executive budget at the end of this month. But then the state and the federal government are going to have to fix their problems long before June, which is when we have to actually balance our budget and get the city council on board.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We'll get right back to you. And don't forget, we'll take your questions before the hour is finished at 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We continue here on the John Gambling Show, Friday get-together, 24 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Story, and I got so many things I want to ask you, but let me go to the story in the New York Post this morning about numbers of tickets, both moving and parking violations, significantly.
Some days you can't win for losing. We've brought crime down, which means fewer summonses, and people say, oh, fewer summonses. The bottom line is we have this crime is down in all these categories.
So we're behaving better.
Because there's better enforcement. We've been moving. A couple of these stories, I think, might have come from a few disgruntled people who didn't like their shifts changed. But, Kelly's always moving things around to make more efficient and better. And some of the tours were starting too early, so we made them later. So some cops said, oh, I don't want to get off late in the afternoon. I'd like to get off early. And that's where probably some of this stuff comes. But if you take the traffic enforcement officers and the cops together, the number of summonses, I think, is up, certainly not down. and people are behaving better. And moving a lot of this stuff from the cops over to the traffic enforcement agents is a good move, because that frees the cops up to go after the more serious stuff. But you certainly don't walk away from, you know, this the broken windows theory. We're going after all the small crime. And, you know, the city continues to get better. I mean, we had the second best, second lowest murder rate since we started keeping records, and it was only slightly 5% more than, and there's a lot of noise in the numbers. They go up and down. Virtually every category, crime keeps coming down, coming down, coming down, and it's going to continue to come down, and we're going to have to do it with fewer cops. That's the budget reality. Everybody says, you know, I'm paying too many taxes, and then when you say, well, we're going to have, you know, one less engine in your firehouse, or we're going to have fewer cops, or we're going to pick up the trash a different schedule. Oh, I don't want to change that. Well, somebody's got to pay for it.
Any significant or measurable revenue reduction because of the numbers of summonses that aren't?
No, I mean, they're number one, you're talking about small numbers of change in the number of summonses if it's down 5%. And this brings in some revenue, so maybe a couple million dollars. Keep in mind, our city budget is something like $60 billion, of which $43 billion in rough numbers is city taxpayer funds. The rest is federal monies that you get and you have to spend. Well, you don't get them. That's not our big problem. Our big problem is you drive up the street and you'll see more empty stores than you have in a long time.
I was talking about it this week.
I go to restaurants. You know, I can't tell you the number of restaurants I've gone to. I eat out every night and try to eat in, you know, around the city, different boroughs, different kinds of food. I like everything. My waistline shows that. I got to be careful. But, you know, the restaurants are a third or half full.
Yeah, I was out with one of my sons the other night and talking with the owner as well, and he was saying exactly the same thing.
Oh, we had dinner at a small bar a week ago, bar steakhouse, but, you know, a nice family kind of place. The owner said people are ordering hamburgers instead of steaks. They're ordering one glass of wine instead of a bottle. And so I felt bad. I did order. I wasn't going to drink that night. I thought it was my waistline. But we did. Diane and I did have a bottle of wine.
So what do you make of? Let's pick up on that. What do you make of the talk in Washington, the Obama speech yesterday that you heard?
Well, it's fascinating that all of a sudden everybody, before he even gets into office, is starting to scream. They don't like any part of his program, and it's the Democrats that are screaming his own party. Look, this is going to be very hard, very contentious. It's going to be true at the federal level, the state level, and the city level, throughout this country, in fact, around the world. And everybody's going to complain, but in the end, something will get done. The president-elect has appointed some people who I think are very good friends of mine. Do they know how to solve all the world's problems? No. But they're at least doing something. I think Hank Paulson and Geithner, who's going to follow him, Tim Geithner, they are trying to do things. And they have. They've stabilized the financial system. You don't see these enormous swings in the stock market every day. You don't read about people panicking and selling or banks going out of business or merging or brokerage firms disappearing. Things are better. That doesn't mean those stocks are going up, doesn't mean anything's going up, but the panic is over. So they've done something. The big problem we have is a crisis of confidence. And that's a lot harder to fix. And I have some ideas on how you should do it. Everybody talks about things. Everybody wants to say, I want to do what's right for the country, but I have this little group that supports me and they need help. Well, you can't help everybody. And how in a democracy you do what's best for the country rather than, and still have the votes from everybody when you're not doing what's best for them, that's a hard road.
What are some of your ideas on how you get the confidence back?
Well, some they're doing. You focus on people who are about to lose their homes, because if you lose your home, number one, you then become a big problem for society. You're likely to lose your job and lots of other things. But you also destabilize your whole neighborhood. So the cascading effect. So that is one of the really important things. And they're trying to renegotiate a couple of million mortgages. There are some ways to do that. The second thing I would do is infrastructure, although anybody that thinks that infrastructure is going to provide an enormous number of jobs right away is just wrong.
Because, I've been maintaining that.
Well, we are going to lose a couple hundred. The estimates say we'll lose a couple hundred thousand jobs in the city. Most will be, not from the construction industry, although there will be some, most will be from stores and offices and restaurants. And those people aren't going to drive backhoes. Just not going to do it. That's not going to happen. So we should do the infrastructure. It helps. It's terribly important for our future. But it's not, and it is does create some jobs, and there is some trickle-down effect. But as Obama said, you got to do something quickly, and that's not going to be quick, even with projects that we are called shovel-ready. In New York City, we have a $10.4 billion capital budget this year, even in spite of all of the things, because we have to invest our future. The rest of the public should reach into their pockets. Outside of New York City, they don't. We're doing it ourselves, not getting any help. So I have a little bit of not too much sympathy when other people complain that, you know, that, and then they go and try to take business away from New York saying, oh, we're low taxes, you're high taxes. Yeah, we're our high taxes. And we're making the investment so our children will have something. But what you've got to do is, I'm not so sure the federal government has to send a lot of money to the states and cities to get construction going. What you have to do is open up the municipal bond market so they could guarantee municipal debt. They could offer to subsidize municipal interest rates. They could change the laws so that more people would want to invest in the municipal bond market. And then you would have municipalities, if they want a bridge to nowhere, the public in that area is doing it with their own money. And otherwise, Congress makes the decisions as to which bridges to build, and they're never going to get
that
right.
And what happens when that money stops?
Well, that's the other problem. But here, if you could get municipalities to make their own investments, decide what's in their interest at the local level where it should be done, and I think that there's an awful lot of places, if they could have access to the market, they would borrow right away. But the insurance companies that used to guarantee municipal debt are all gone or don't have the credit and the wherewithal to guarantee.
Those are the AIGs and the others.
Yeah, right. AMBAC and those kinds of companies. Then the next thing is, if you want to create jobs, it's one thing to, we can come back and talk about General Motors kind of company, but it's small businesses. That's where people are really losing their jobs. They don't have a lot of power, and they don't make the press because it's, you know, a company lays off 10% of its workers, two people. Oh, well, two people. Nobody pays any attention to that. If the 10% of General Motors, a lot of people would pay a lot of attention to it. But in this city, for example, half the people that work for small companies. And we have a very aggressive program to help small companies get loans, train people to work in small businesses, match companies with their needs with skill sets from people looking for jobs. But the federal government could have a program of loans for small companies. And you don't even have to do the money. You say, you incent local banks to do it. Because local banks, you don't have to build another infrastructure. That's the same thing with the municipal bond idea. We don't need another federal bureaucracy. Here, you can give the local bank, the federal government can guarantee, let's say, I don't know, 90% of the debt, so they still have some skin in the game so that they're not going to make stupid loans. But they know the local businessman, they already have loan officers who you don't want to have get laid off and just contribute to the problem. And you could even subsidize the interest rate somewhat, although if the loan failed, then the bank would have to lose something. Otherwise, the bank has no incentive to only make good loans. But that's where you're going to create jobs, and you're going to do that overnight. If small businesses stay in business, and if they grow, if they could add a couple people, every one of them, you could solve this problem, and it filters through the community, would get confidence going right away.
And the beauty of what you're saying is that it is all local, it is done by the people of the United States, it is not a national or federalization.
But wait a second, where's the great press conference to spend $1 trillion? That's the problem with my idea.
All right, Mr. Mayor, take a rest. Back off from the microphone here for a couple of minutes. We've gone a little long here. 8:34, let's get some news. Here's Joe Bartlett. Joe.
All right, John.
All right, we got Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling and you here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. If you've got, let's see, two lines open, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for the mayor, give us a shout, get in line. We will get to you before we finish up here. I want to continue where we were just before the news here in your ideas on how you get confidence back, how you get the economy back to where it is. I know it's a national issue and not a New York City one, but it is. It's everybody's problem. What worries me is the federalism, the nationalism that is going on.
Well, because people want a solution, and they want a cost-free solution. So, you know, if you do a study, you ask the people, do you want higher taxes or fewer services? And they all say fewer services. 85%, something overwhelmingly, say fewer services. Anything's better than higher taxes. And then you say, okay, which services should we cut? Well, the first thing they say is cut waste. Okay, that's 0.001%, and there's always going to be some, but okay. It costs you more probably to get it out than you say, but
right.
That's another issue. And then you say, okay, now what's cut the other guy's service. But then you say, okay, I'll give you a good example. In New York City, education and uniform services, police, fire, sanitation, corrections, about 50-55% of our budget. Unfunded mandates where we have to provide things, which mainly means senior programs, another 20-25%. That's 75% before you start. You can't cut any of those. Well, the others, you could close them. And wouldn't be able to balance your budget, and you can't close them. You know, everybody uses some of these services. And the reason for the federal government is they don't have to raise taxes. They can print money. Now, you can argue that your kids are going to pay. You can argue we're going to be the Weimar Republic. You can argue that, I said yesterday, Social Security. It's a Ponzi scheme. I don't know if Bernie Madoff got his idea from there, but if there's ever a Ponzi scheme, people say Madoff was the biggest. Wrong. Social Security is far and away. We are giving money out with the next guy's money coming in, and at the end of when the music stops, there's just not going to be enough chairs for everybody. I don't know when that's going to happen. You and I will probably be long gone because it can string it on for a long time. But we want things done for us without paying, and the federal government can do that. The real problem, I think, is you got to decide what you want to do, our objectives, and everybody's got different objectives. I want more infrastructure. It will help the economy and create jobs, but it's not basically a job creation program. It's a investment for our future kind of program, which we absolutely have to do, no matter how much the pain and suffering is. You got to do this, or we're not going to have a future. Your kids, my kids won't have one. A good example is the automobile companies in Detroit. Now, Ford seems to be doing better, but GM and Chrysler's
just about done.
What do you want to do in terms of those companies? Do you want to make them viable and be able to compete on a world stage and never need another bailout from the federal government? Or do you want to help the overall economy? And people say, I want both. You can't have both, because if you want to make those companies viable, you would cut their capacity in half. Half the number of dealers, half the number of factories, half the number of employees, half the number of suppliers. That would put another million people on the unemployment rolls. You say, oh, I don't need another million people on the unemployment rolls when I'm trying to help the economy. Now, if you're going to help the economy, give them money, send them checks, which is what we did, and that was the decision in San Diego was made. We're not going to have any reforms here. We're just going to go ahead and keep people working, even if they make cars nobody wants to buy or do them inefficiently or whatever the case may be. I'm not knocking the companies, but if you want to make them viable longer term, you probably would downsize them dramatically, except it would not have a good effect on the overall economy. And the difference really is the time frame. The overall economy today, the industry down the road. And everybody says, well, I'll worry about down the road, down the road. Obama said that a little bit yesterday, and I'm sympathetic to him. He's got to figure out what to do right now. And that may not be consistent with what you'd like to do long term. For example, big debt, sending checks to everybody may help the economy. Paying for it down the road is not a great idea, but
speaking of that, yesterday a report from the Citizens Budget Commission pointing out that a New York City employee in 2000 average total cost, all in bennies and everything, 65. 2008, $106,000.
Well, if you have two worker family, In New York City, and you both are in the municipal workers, which is a lot of. A lot of families would just devote their lives to public service. You know, they are what some people would define as rich. Make a couple $100,000 a year. Now, they would tell you that they have trouble making ends meet, that, you know, if they're going to send their kids to college, they can't have the money, that, you know, every cost is going up, like commuting MTA, if the government, if the state doesn't do anything about the MTA budget, costs are going to go up. But yes, a lot of it comes, the biggest problem we have is our pension and health benefits are going to go up something like, I forget the numbers, but about $6 billion annually in about 5 years. It'll be about $6 billion.
Does that need to be mitigated as we go forward?
If you're a beneficiary, no.
Right. I understand
if you're on the other
but
side.
But if you're the management.
It isn't management. It's the taxpayer on the other
That's
side. Management just works for the taxpayers. This is not the employer versus the employee. This is the public versus the employee. And I'm the first guy to say, you want to have a good workforce, you got to pay them well. And I've always, in my company and in the city, I believe we should pay our employees well. Having said that, there's a limit to what you can afford. If you go, I was at this plaque dedication, a member of the board of the Uniform Firefighters Officers Association, UFOA, pointed out that 3/4 of their members are retired. There are more people in the union out of that have retired than are working. And when some of these conservative columnists, they write, oh, you should demand better or less pension benefits. Well, keep in mind, you can't even talk about pension benefits when you're negotiating a labor contract, because the pensions have a different universe of people they cover than the employees. So you have to do it separately. And there's a state law that says if you ever give a benefit,
you can't take it back.
Can't even the state that gave it to them can't take it back. So it's very hard to see how you would solve the problem of already given benefits and mushroom growing out of
control. I don't think you can, but you can start anew.
Okay, you could start anew. That's what we call a fifth tier. The governor suggested that for our employees, didn't suggest it for his uniform service. He did for some of his employees, not for others, but he did include at our asking the idea in his budget to do it for everybody in New York City. You can do it, but you're not going to get any benefit from it for a number of years. Why? Number one, we're not going to hire more people. We're downsizing city government, so there isn't going to be new people coming in. Number two, it's a small percentage. You had 5% turnover. It takes a long time before a majority of your employees come in after any one given date. So we'll have, now, you can fight that battle, or you could fight with, you know, you negotiate something that gives you more short-term effect. And that's, once again, back there, you've got a short-term problem, and you can't focus on the long-term because you can't do both.
And it'll be somebody else's problem anyway.
You're not going to be, and nobody's going to like you for it, and somebody else will benefit. That's the other thing in a lot of these programs. Having said that, I still think we have the best workforce anybody has in any municipality. That's why this city works, and I will do everything I can to keep as many of them employed as we possibly can. And if we downsize, I hope we can do it through attrition. Now, attrition doesn't work very well when the economy's bad because people tend not to retire. They tend to stay on longer, but there is some. And we have some very good union leaders, and we'll work with them and try to find some ways to keep as many of their members employed as possible.
I read today, I think it was today or it was yesterday at the latest, Shelley Silver indicating that he is going to let you remain the man at the control of the education system.
He's talked about that. He's talked about tweaking. I think the one thing that is not going to happen.
I know this is really important to you.
It is important to you and me and our kids and everybody else. If you want to fix society long-term, education. I hope that's the way it comes out. What you can't have is a bill called Mayoral Control where the mayor's not in control. I mean, control is a pretty binary thing. You either make the decisions or you don't. Now, there's always some restrictions. There are legal restrictions on what you can do. We have civil service. We have contracts with unions. I mean, there's a variety of those things. But fundamentally, I don't think any of the reforms that we put in, any of them, would have been put in if you had a committee. Committee is a euphemism for the old Board of Ed. That's what it was. And you can have advice from people, but in the end, has to be one decision maker. And that's what mayoral control is all about. Test scores keep going up. Graduation rates keep going up. Crime in the schools keep coming down. We're the hot place for teachers from around the country to come and work. You know, we have 80,000 teachers that make an enormous difference. They're happy. You know, they're very proud, I think is a better word, of what they're doing. If we don't have control, you're not going to have control.
All right, Yankee Stadium. The Yankees have come back to the city and the state for more bond money.
Yeah.
$260 million worth, I think.
It's federal. There's a program that the federal government loans them the money. We administer it, and they do it at a low rate for economic development. That's the purpose of this program. And the Yankees get a lower rate because the bonds are tax-exempt at a federal, state, and city level. Now, somebody says, oh, well, therefore, the city's subsidizing because we're not getting taxes on that. Yeah, well, if they didn't build, we wouldn't have any tax revenues. So, you know, come on. It's become one of these cause celebs, but they will. There's a federal government, and nobody wants to cut
back.
Well,
you can understand when they invest $400 million in three players.
Look, the public invests a dollar a year in me. I don't know what they pay you. If I could throw
a
ball.
It's only a little bit more than
that. Right. If I could throw a ball, you know, like one of those guys, maybe I could get that kind of money. That's their business. What the economic value of having the Yankees and the Mets and the here, come on. I mean, you know, and the stadiums are all built with private money, almost all. We've done some infrastructure. When I came into office, remember, they had an agreement with the city where the city would have built these stadiums. Can you imagine the overruns and that sort of thing if the city had built them? And I just walked away from it because they hadn't signed the paper yet. And I said, I'm sorry, we can't afford that. We've got to build schools and firehouses and whatever else, water tunnels. We can't afford to do it. So they came up, both the Steinbrenner and Wilpon organizations, and they've each invested, I don't know, $800 million in. And yes, we've had to give some infrastructure, which we would have had to do anyways, even the old stadiums. We had the dirty little secret is we had an obligation to fix up Yankee Stadium from an old contract that would have cost us more to do than the amount of money we had to invest in infrastructure for the new stadium. So the state didn't have that, and they matched us dollar for dollar. So the state, it was all a contribution from them. The city, it really was free. Because we would have had to spend the money anyway.
Timing is everything, but it's really extraordinary that the tri-state area has three brand new stadiums.
Well, you know, Giant, if you Yankee, go back and you look at the projects that we wanted to build if we got the Olympics, we got a number of those done anyways without the Olympics. Not all, and the convention center is the big thing that still comes back to haunt us. You know, every time I'm in Chicago, I drive by their McCormick Center. You could put the Javits Center inside the McCormick Center, and you'd have to ask directions on how to get to it. I mean, and that's, yeah, convention business is tough. It's getting much tougher if we had a bigger, better facility, of which there's no money and nothing on the horizon for us to ever do this anymore. We could have had the most phenomenal convention center, all paid for by the Jets organization, and all they wanted to do was to rent the place for 12 Sundays. I mean, it was...
Speaking of arenas, the Ratner Arena.
I'm sure, because the economy is different. You know, you're selling a lot of ads? No. Is he selling a lot of ads? No. I mean, you know, I haven't seen the stadium in New Jersey, the new stadium. They haven't got a naming tenant yet to put the name on. It's a different world. But, you know, we need that stadium. It would be an enormous economic boon to that part of Brooklyn. And hopefully Ratner will find a ways to do it. But I'm sure he's having a tough time. So is everybody else. At least he's trying to go ahead.
All right. Let's take some questions from our listeners. At 800-321-0710. We will do that, Mr. Mayor, when we come right back.
The John Gambling Show. 5 minutes before 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock is our WOR time with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, we're going to the phones, if that's okay with you. We're going to start with line number 5. Linda in Queens, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning. For years, I've taken the Williamsburg Bridge into Manhattan at about 6:30 in the morning. And the traffic agents on the Manhattan side of the bridge along Delancey have always done a fantastic job. This week, there's a new crew of traffic agents, and the problem is that they are not directing traffic. They're standing on the sidewalks under the store awnings. As a result, there's a 20-minute backup into Brooklyn. I called 311. They referred me to the 7th Precinct. They referred me back to 311. Mayor, can you put a call in and get the traffic agents back along Delancey?
I don't know if I can get them back, but I will put a call in. I can promise you that. I think, actually, there was a big change. If you come across the Williamsburg inbound and turn right and go north on Clinton Street to Houston, there used to be you could park along the street, which meant there was a 2-lane road. They got rid of the parking. It's now a 3-lane road, and I'm told the traffic is a lot better. I will make sure that we talk to the police commissioner and tell him people are standing under an awning, and
people are sitting in cars.
You don't want to be on the wrong side of Ray Kelly.
No, you don't. Linda,
and thank you for calling.
I think you've got the answer, and only time will tell, but I'm sure the mayor will do something about it. Carol in Brooklyn, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning,
John.
I want to know why on my Verizon telephone bill, where I pay separately for my long distance, there is a surcharge in taxes. It says New York Metropolitan Transit Authority surcharge.
Welcome to the world of Albany. That's the way they get a lot of monies. They put taxes on things like your telephone bill, your electric bill. And then they don't have to raise the tax rate. It's a ways fundamentally to tax people without people really seeing it. Now, I'm sympathetic in that in the end, we're all going to pay. If you want these services, you got to pay. I mean, you know.
There was a tax on phone bills that went back, as I remember, to the Spanish-American War that was just recently removed.
You know, fundamentally, nothing ever is removed.
It just gets shifted off the plate, right?
Well, yeah, and the people don't pay any attention. But it is annoying, Carol. Look at your electric bill. You'll see a very similar thing. And, you know, the electric companies complain, and the phone companies complain that looks like their services cost a lot more than they're getting. Why pick on those two companies? Why don't you have a tax on, ice cream? And maybe that is in the governor's budget. I have to go check. Could have been.
All right, Carol, good luck. Thanks for the phone call. Let's go to Bill in Bay Ridge. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh,
yeah, you've got the mayor. Go.
Yes, Happy New Year, Mr. Mayor.
And to you.
I have a problem. My son took my house up. One family wanted to make it a multifamily so we could have some income. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. He walked away from it. It's in foreclosure trying to get there, but I keep getting taxes. I've been down to the department, DEP, to New York Finance. They've been to the house. It's still there. Over 100,000. The house is just a shell. There's no gas, electricity, no rooms, no ceiling.
Bill, I don't know whether you legally have to continue to pay or not, but if you stay on the line, we'll get your number, and I will at least have somebody from the Department of Finance call you. And
appreciate that.
Happy to do it. So sorry it didn't work out.
All right, Bill, I'm going to put you on hold here. Hopefully that's going to work. Yes, it did. Good. All right. Let's see. Let's go to
Bertha.
Bertha, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Real fast, Bertha. We're almost out of time. Go.
I'm making a secondary plea to the mayor to please reconsider leaving the homeless shelters open in the churches.
We can't do it. Well, it's not fair. We require, if you want to get city aid, that you're open, I think it's 5 days a week, and that you have all of the other services, because we're trying to help people. Some of these services are well-meaning, but they're busing people all over the city, and then we don't have all of the counseling and other services to help people get back on their feet, and that's why we've done it. You say, why turn away anybody that's willing to house people? The city has enough shelters, and if we need more, we will open it, and clearly there's more demand as the economy slows down. But we want to make sure that they're safe and that they provide all of the kinds of services so that people can get their lives back together. So, we're on the same side of it. We got to make sure it's doing everything.
Not getting any easier, is it?
It is not getting any easier.
Well, that's going to do it for us today, but we'll do it next Friday.
With the snow this weekend. Slippery. Stop in on others. If you don't have any heat, call 3.
311, and we'll make sure.
We're done. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll catch up with you on